I want to welcome you to Fency. Certainly, it's been beautiful weather here in Atlanta, and I know that this is probably your first meeting, so I just want to remind you that there will be Fency evaluations are going to be emailed at the conclusion of each day. And new for this year, attendees now can access evaluations via a mobile app, or you can do your evaluations online. However you do your evaluations, you need to enter your attendee name by your badge number or by your member number to complete the daily program evaluation. But on Tuesday, you'll also receive an overall Fency evaluation at the conclusion of the meeting. So if you have any questions, contact the professional development staff. But I think everybody will do their evaluation. So I want to welcome you to this session. This is the 7th annual lectureship supported by the annual Wimpheimer-Guggenheim Fund for International Exchange in the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics Foundation. This year is Global Dietetic Alliances, the European Experience, and I know we're going to have a very interesting presentation and discussion this morning. So on behalf of all members and guests around the globe, I want to also acknowledge Alice Wimpheimer, who is here, for her generosity, commitment, and vision in helping us to advance the nutrition and dietetics issues, and also to bring us together for this very important event and sharing of information. And it is my pleasure this morning to introduce Dr. Anne Deloy. She is currently the honorary president of the European Foundation of the Association of Dietitians, and we have an acronym, EFAD. EFAD promotes the trans-border European profession and represents half of the dietitians in Europe. She is also the honorary secretary of the Association of Nutrition and former chair of the Board of Trustees for the British Nutrition Foundation. As a member of a number of committees, Anne has a dedicated and profound interest in the European health profession's agenda. She is currently the nutrition coordinator for a EU-funded thematic network for dietitians, Dietitians Improving Education and Training Standards in Europe, or DIETS for short. This network links 95 institutions together across 31 countries in Europe. And so today I also want to acknowledge she was the first professor of dietetics in the UK at Queen Margaret University College in Edinburgh, and then she became head of programs in dietetics at the University of Plymouth and the head of the School of Health Professions. She is also an honorary fellow of the British Dietetic Association and has chaired many multi-professional groups of allied health professionals and works with them and as a partner of the Health Professions Council. Her research interest is the role of carbohydrate in controlling appetite, especially in energy-reduced diets, and her dedication to the professionalism of dietetics. I've heard her speak many times, and she does a wonderful job with talking about all of our issues. Today's lecture will focus on lessons learned in leadership, trial, tribulation, and politics. Dr. Deloy.
Thank you so much, Judith, for that introduction. I'm a bit humbled that I should have been asked to come and speak. And my goodness me, don't you start early in the morning? In Europe, you know, 9 o'clock, 9:30, just about right. 8 o'clock and 7, my goodness me, wow. Anyway, it is my absolute pleasure to come and tell you, share with you, enthuse you, discuss with you, debate with you what we've been doing in Europe. And that's all due to the generosity of Alice and the invitation which I received from the foundation and particularly the Wimpheimer Guggenheim Foundation to come. It's just amazing that I'm here. So thank you. Come with me, if you will, on a journey. A journey which started about 11 years ago when I became involved with EFAD, and I am going to use the acronym if that's okay with you. European da-da-da-da-da-da is a long thing to say, so we'll start at the beginning. And I'm going to take you through what we've been doing in Europe and try and share with you, as Judith said, some of the information that we've learned along the way, and particularly the politics. And it was interesting, I was invited to go and speak to a conference in Milan, and so I prepared my material, and there were several tracks to that conference, and I went in and I sat through lectures on the importance of tea in the diet, and nutrigenomics and so forth. And then I got up and spoke. And it was clear that what I was speaking about wasn't quite what the audience had expected me to be speaking about. And when I sat down, the chairman leaned across and he said, "My goodness me, was that political?" And I thought to myself, yes, and this audience was a scientific audience, and I was giving a political message. And the funny thing is, I'd never thought of myself as being political. So I think I've grown into that role. And so if there are any beginners in dietetics thinking about moving into a career, the one thing I would say, and certainly for students, is learn how to operate in an environment politically, because it's how you go about doing things, not sometimes what you know, that matters. So I'm going to take you through three phases, and you'll see as we go that phase three, in fact, is 2014 and into the future. We had a conference, an EFAD conference last week, and we were beginning to plan for what we were going to be doing now into the 2020s. But I wanted to go back just a moment to set the scene. This is a picture of the Tower of London, and they're constructing an exhibit, an art exhibition, if you like, what a sculpture, whatever you want to call it. They're planting, they're made of acrylic, a million poppies to represent the million UK soldiers and others who gave their lives during the First World War, because this is the 100th anniversary of the beginning of the First World War. And you can see that these poppies are gradually growing into the moat around the tower. And I wanted to give you this as an impression, really, because Europe has been through enormous changes. We've had two world wars on the soil. It's meant boundaries changing and shifting. It's meant that through in our lifetime, we've seen a united Germany. In our lifetime, we've seen the disintegration, if you like, of Yugoslavia. And this brings terrific economic hurdles for countries to overcome, not just the politics of it. So there's a lot for dietitians to do. But we're also, some countries are very much stuck in a time warp. And as we go through, we'll see that in some countries, the power of the medical profession holds sway over everything. And this has really slowed down the progression of the profession in Europe in some countries. So let's get to know some European dietitians and some emerging alliances. We're not going to go global at this stage, but what I'm hoping is that by the time we get to the end, we'll have some impressions of what might be important to really establish if we are going to really form strong global alliances. And the talk yesterday, I think, just emphasized how we're growing so quickly, exponentially, I think was the term, and no longer can we be separate entities for dietetics, for feeding, for nutrition, for overcoming malnutrition, we really need to think of a global perspective here, and that's going to be increasingly important. So how do we form these alliances? EFAD was founded in 1978 with only 10 members, member associations. We now have 30 member associations representing some 32,000 dietitians in 29 countries in Europe. And we estimate that that's about half the number of dietitians that are in Europe. Language is fun, I would say. We're very privileged in EFAD to have English speakers, and English is our bottom line. But I am very, very aware that that probably means that about 30,000 dietitians are not in communication with us because they don't speak fluent, sufficient English. Liechtenstein and Malta, just to give you a perspective, have four dietitians, respectively. They're not in EFAD. And in Liechtenstein, three of those dietitians commute into the country every day. The average is one per 10,000 of the population in Europe, but it ranges from 1.5 to 1 to 150 in Poland. So when is a dietitian a dietitian in Europe? In some countries, a qualification in food technology and a placement in brewing can mean the country recognizes you as a dietitian. In one country in Europe, only an MSc with no placement qualifies you as a dietitian. In one country, you're not allowed to speak to patients in a hospital environment by law. It's actually written in the law. But you can still be called a dietitian. So placements are fun for that group of dietitians. In two countries, the qualification is based on a two-year program. In one country, dietitians need mainly to be a doctor. That's the only way you can be a dietitian. And in several countries, the dietetic association you join depends on which university you qualified in or at. So you can see that dietitians come in a wide spectrum. And that is really interesting. I was in the House of Delegates breakfast meeting yesterday morning, and that was fascinating because I thought you really don't realize what a privileged position you are in, that 75,000 dietitians who are members of the Academy all have to meet very stringent requirements. But if you travel from the UK to France to Malta, well, if I travel to Malta, I probably won't see a dietitian anyway because there are so few of them. So my healthcare needs, if I'm a patient, have a difficulty being met. There's a diversity of roles. So we have clinical dietitians, food service dietitians, public health dietitians, and what we might call general dietitians who cover a wide range. We can work as consultants, such as in the UK, running our own clinics autonomously in Sweden, only with a doctor's prescription in Hungary. Dietitians in Hungary only operate with a doctor's agreement, and privately run clinics in Greece. Diversity can mean the quality of practice varies, as you can begin to imagine. And the titles also vary across Europe. And I've written them in English here because I'm not really very good at pronouncing the names in the other languages. So in Germany, they're called diet assistants. In Spain, a dietitian, nutritionist. And in the UK, we are an RD. Here is the number of EFAD, the members of the federation in member states. You can see Latvia has very few. And then if we put them there per head of population, we begin to see the wide differential in the different countries. And I worked out that in the US, on current numbers of 75,000 registered academy dietitians are probably 1 to 4,300 of population. So the diversity and the bumping into a dietitian, if you like, in some countries is very rare. And yet those countries often, such as Poland and Latvia, have such chronic need for example, dietitians seeing malnourished diabetic or obese patients. Europe is a big place. We have 22 official languages, 7 major religions, great diversity in population, and, as I said, about 32,000 are members. And like everywhere else, our population is growing, especially the diversity of cultures. Our aims are to promote the development of the profession, both on a scientific and professional level, facilitate communication across our organization, but also with the education providers and governments, and generally to encourage a better nutritional situation for the people of Europe. I really became interested in EFAD when I was invited by someone that you may well know, Irene Mackay. Irene invited me to come and do a workshop in 2003 with our general meeting in Roskilde, Denmark. And during that general meeting, I explained about various benchmarks, if you like, that other professional groups had been putting in place. There's Roskilde. And on that day, I invited EFAD to actually think about where it wanted to go and what were its real ambitions, not general aims, but its real ambitions. And I would like to think that that was the first time that they formed this strong alliance to adopt a really purposeful agenda and strategy. And they called it the Roskilde Declaration. Well, that's a picture of the high street. So I think alliances plan together for a common outcome which is going to be beneficial to everyone involved. And this is the Roskilde Declaration. And the figures in brackets is when, in fact, that was achieved. So to agree a description of the role of the dietitian in Europe, as you can see, there was great diversity. That was achieved in 2005. Investigate the requirement for a minimum qualification across Europe. There hadn't been one up until this point. There was huge diversity. And the actual minimum requirement was achieved in 2005, but of course it's still being implemented by higher education throughout Europe. To agree a common academic and practitioner standard for dietetics, again, that was a document that was achieved in 2005. To set a benchmark for teachers or preceptors of dietetics, that was achieved in 2013. To agree a common language by defining technical terms, we have a glossary, we have introduced IDNT into some countries. ICF Dietetique is also being used, and that was introduced in the Netherlands some 20-odd years ago, so that's ongoing. We have yet to have a national registration of dietitians, and we have not achieved a consideration yet of a registering a European dietitian. Here's the European Academic and Practitioner Standards, which were unanimously adopted in 2005 and available in 10 different languages. And it includes, importantly, a benchmark for the practical element, the component, the internship, if you will. And we stated that it was essential that a qualification in dietetics had a practical component, and we proposed a minimum of 6 months. What was the significance of this declaration? Provided a standard for education for new and older programs, a benchmark, if you will, provided a standard for European dietitians to lobby ministries of education, health and employment, especially they can wave it at people and say, this is the European standard, and that's important when negotiating registration. And it provided protection and the basis for patient safety, especially when there's cross-border movement. If all dietitians in Europe were educated to the same standard, had the same practical experiences in order to qualify, we would then confidently move, people could confidently move between one sector, one country and another, and know that they would get a similar service. Provides cohesion for dietitians in Europe. We talk about the benchmark statement as something really significant. I don't know about you, but I don't think I'd be happy going to see someone who had a bachelor's degree in food science and had undertaken a practical training in a brewery and meeting them to help me out with my diabetes. You can see the problem. Alliances monitor their progress. A benchmark statement allows us to repeatedly go back and see how we're doing. So we really ought to, in any alliance, know where we start and then be able to go back and look and monitor our performance. So in 2007, associations began to disseminate this statement to ministries. New programs were started in Switzerland and Slovenia based on the benchmark statement. Lithuania and Romania followed, although they've made quite substantial changes to the statement, interpreted it in their own country. And we're hoping that Estonia in 2016 will introduce a dietetic program. Estonia has no dietitians at the moment. And in 2008, Spain entirely revised their whole academic programs, lengthened the practical training, and they told me it was due to EU requirements. And I said, oh, really? Where did they come from? Oh, well, you know, there's an EU academic statement about dietetics. I said, really? Yes, let me show it to you, they said. And guess what it was? It was the one we'd adopted in 2005. Isn't that amazing? It had become, overnight, the EU standard. So the significance was political. In 2006, I was challenged because now I was kind of in the grips of EFAD, and they said, well, we've got all this imagination. We'd want to do this and this and this. Where are we going to get the money? So I said, well, let's try writing a bid and see where we go. So in 2006, we were successful in making a bid to the European Union to establish a network across Europe for dietetic education. And we were awarded 1 million euros to do this three-year project, which we estimate is about $1.3 million. And we called it Dietitians Improving Education and Training Standards in Europe. And this is a quick picture of what it looked like. We had 123 partners in 29 countries. And that was is still our website. This is the very, very first page of our 2006 website. So the 123 partners offered the first opportunity of access to both teachers of HEIs and practicing dietitians. And we also had some others, such as Israel, join in. So we went slightly out of what you would call Europe. And it was important to bring both those groups together, because EFAD only has, at that point, members of that are associations. So we now had 70 HEIs joining us. HEIs are higher education institutions. And that represented a very large resource in terms of potential data collection and, of course, dissemination. And consequently, alliances were formed between higher education institutions, NDAs, and we had a few non-governmental organizations included and some other research groups. So this facilitated a multi-stakeholder alliance, and that was really important for pushing forward agendas for dietitians. We had common objectives, and we had regular and strong communication channels created, particularly something called key contacts. Every one of the 120 partners had to have a key contact, and this allowed us to target one individual in every partner, and we sent information and we gathered information through that key contact. We also had other ways of communicating with each other. But we all had to work in English, and it was just wonderful. I was talking to one member from Portugal, and she joined from an HEI, and she was very excited about joining this network. We were overwhelmed with applications. In fact, we were so overwhelmed with applications that the agency in the EU funding us said, you've got far too many partners. We normally only have about 50, and you've got at least double. That's going to be very difficult to manage. Well, yes, tell me about it. Anyway, this lovely lady called Ana Catarina from Portugal, at the end of the three-year project, she said, do you know, Anne, the one thing that has happened to me from this engagement with this project, apart from all the things that we said we were going to do, I've learnt English. Because we had continual virtual meetings and face-to-face meetings, and they really had to get good at English. And she was so overwhelmed that they've done this. And this has happened again and again through the years. So alliances develop their own language of purpose, and this brings cohesion. We're all looking in the same direction. And this was the first structure of the Diets Network. We had visits groups, and I'm going to tell you a bit about that. And, of course, we had the key contacts. And Judith Liddell, who you see a picture of there, is the Secretary General of EFAD. And I think it's true to say that Judith and I, she has so many complementary skills and gifts to me. Judith is the rock of the foundation of the federation. So we wanted to develop dietetic competencies, strengthening dietetic practice education, improve communication between educators and practitioners, and develop the role of the dietitian in the promotion of nutritional health through embedding lifelong learning through the competencies. So what were some of our outcomes? Well, we provided funding for 48 dietitians and their university teachers to participate in 45 exchange visits in 22 countries. And they went and visited each other for some 3 to 4 days. And that was a real eye-opener. So we had two dietitians from a dietitian and a higher education lecturer from Latvia come and work with us in Plymouth for about a week. And that was a real eye-opener to them and to us. It was absolutely extraordinary, and we learned so much about dietetics in Europe. We asked that all the materials that these visitors collected would be lodged on the website, often in their own language, which made difficulty for us. However, these materials were lodged, and they were used particularly in a later phase, and you'll see that, for practice placement guidance. But anyone could access these in the network. And we even instituted seminar groups of dietetic students, and they did virtual visits with each other across Europe, and they just adored that. And, of course, they were good at English. And we undertook an education survey to find out if we'd had any changes due to the introduction of the benchmark. So alliances facilitate communication and unity of purpose. Visits were cohesive because they encouraged networking and sharing. They improved communication between educators and practitioners. And for the first time, we saw groups in countries of the universities meeting with the associations. And that hadn't happened before. Incredible to think, but it hadn't happened before in some countries. We developed the skills of the teachers. We developed quality indicators for practice dietetic education. We enabled sharing and dissemination of best practice through lodging and through conferences and so forth. We promoted evidence-based practice and data for the description of all areas of practice. And we developed knowledge networks which would enhance a sustainable culture within Europe. So strengthening the alliance means knowing more about each other, and this supports the sustainability in the long run. However, one has to be aware of language, culture, diversity, and the sheer number of times that people know and learn about other countries and other ways of doing things. Change doesn't happen quickly in an alliance, no matter how hard you work at it. This is some of the information we received, which we used against our benchmark. As you'll see, the standard that we set was about 6 months, about 900 hours of practice, supervised practice, and as you can see, only 30% actually achieved this. We also looked at teaching during the placement, which was fascinating, And in many countries, there was only one placement, or sometimes there were two, and very rarely were there four placements. And this just gives you an idea of how many times it was reported, for example, that they observed a dietitian. And then if you run down the way, you can see, let the students counsel patients. Well, look at that. Not very often. And this is partly to do, I think, with this medical model and that the doctor always knows best. How many videos were shown, showing different techniques? Again, very, very few. And ask the students to keep a reflective diary. Well, a little bit more going on there. So great diversity. And here we had the only 11 institutions made two visits, one at the very beginning of the network and one at the end. And what was interesting, we asked them to think about, and it was recalled from the visits report, how many had made a change. So, for example, university staff involved in supervision, only two reported that, and then eight reported it at the 3 years later. And you can see that there are some changes. Now, you know, this is a very, very small sample, but it was very encouraging to see these changes. Requirement to have a formal pass or fail at the end of the practice placement went up from 8 to 11. It's hard to believe, isn't it, that students going on a placement didn't need to pass it or fail it when we first started. This is a bit disappointing. Out of 41 institutions that reported, teaching the teacher, a method used to ensure the same level in each practice placement in your own country, only one reported they had goals for the training and evaluation methods. Only six reported they met trainers and academic staff together to talk about the practice placement. So we had a lot of work to do here, and I'll talk about that in a minute. So the results of the visits and the learning achieved was quite immense. And the learning materials and quality indicators used by HEIs were all accessible on the website for all users. And that was an enormous database of tools that could be used freely by any professional involved in the education of dietetic students. Alliances need to be open and share information with each other. And that way they form and strengthen the cohesion. We also looked at the competencies at the point of entry into the profession. And we did this by asking dietitians to rank the importance. And you'll see here, the lower the number, the higher the ranking, the more dietitians actually scored it at number one. Accept accountability, engage in lifelong learning proactively were some of the ones that were highly rated within Europe. A slide slipped in here. When you talk across Europe, you also have to use presentations in different languages, and that's a challenge, lecturing in English, but looking at slides in a different language. Lowest ranked, these were interesting. These are the ones that dietitians in Europe didn't think were important. Interesting, isn't it? We left them in, but they didn't think they were important, so great, huge amount of work to do there. Ranking of generic competencies, I thought you'd be interested in this. We have EU standards of which competencies everyone leaving higher education should actually have, and we could divide our responses into the employers. So employers felt that lifelong learning and ethical and legal information management, reflection and problem solving were important. Those are the dietitians, and the academics were teaching capacity of applying knowledge in practice, basic knowledge, basic general knowledge, and problem solving. So clearly a mismatch there between what's being taught, or at least what's being important, with what the dietitians actually think is important. And then we had some interesting cultural differences. This was the ranking undertaken by clinical dietitians in Cyprus and clinical dietitians in Norway. Again, fascinating, isn't it? So when you have an alliance, you have to allow that there are very different priorities in different places amongst the partnership. So alliances respect differences, as here lies our strengths, and we have to be tolerant, and we have to be prepared to learn together. This is the front page of the questionnaire to detect competencies. That's the Greek version. But there was unanimous adoption in 2009 of the European Dietetic Competency Statements and their performance indicators at the point of entry into the profession. And there have been 18 translations of those competency statements. And these are all on the EFAD website. And they are able then to be used by countries, and countries adopt them but modify them to suit their own needs. We also, remember, wanted to look at lifelong learning, and reflective practice is an incredibly important part of that. So out of 41 institutions, how many actually teach reflective practice? About 50%. And so forth. You can see there's work to be done here, especially if we're to talk about continued education and also continued competence. And finally, we used all that information that we had established to draw up practice placement standards. So we went through everything that we had gathered in, and we put together a set of 18 standards, if you like, an evidence-based group of standards, and we adopted those in 2010 as European practice placement standards for dietetics. Of course, we had fun. We had family time, as I call it. These were our conferences. We started off, our first conference was in Plymouth, where the coordinator lives, so we hosted the first conference, and we started off with, I think, 67 members at that conference. But we've grown since then. Our next conference was in Frankfurt, and the next one was in Lisbon. I thought you'd be interested in this. This is an old slide, in a way. It's 2007, 8, and 9. But website power is amazing. Obviously, we had lots of visitors from Europe. But look at this. Even the Americas joined in. Isn't that something? We're really pleased about that. And, of course, that's continued to grow since that time. So it's amazing how far your reach can be, even when you don't anticipate it. And we also produced 5 reports. The last one, as you can see, is Quality Assurance, Dietetic Competence and Practice Placement Standards. And those are all available on the website. So, we set standards, including continued competence, lifelong learning, reviewed higher education, developed placement, and we supported continuous professional development. But the most important thing is that we had an alliance of HEIs, universities, associations, and others across Europe. That was probably the most important thing that came out of that. And so I wanted to just remind us, never underestimate the power of these alliances. Phase 2. This is 2010 to 2013. So we had our alliance. We had a very cohesive group. Obviously, we had EFAD, but we also now had the higher education institutions. We were all looking in the same direction, or at least trying to. We had our standards, and now what were we going to do with them? How were we going to make a difference? And this is where the naive actually swapped for the politically aware. And one became really, really, really aware of some of the difficulties involved with implementing these standards. Associations can try. Higher education normally takes 4 to 5 years to change anything, even if they want to. We have in the audience here a representative from the German Association. And my goodness me, how long, Daniel, have you been struggling to get yourself not being recognized as a diet assistant and get a 2-year degree?
8 years.
8 years? Because you're working with the German government, for heaven's sakes. Is that right? You're working with the German government. Yeah, okay. So we have now to become much more politically aware. We've got our alliance. How are we going to help people in country to make a change? We started with deciding that EFAD itself had to be a little bit more politically aware, and mission and vision statements are politically important. So we decided to have one of those. We decided to have an annual report so we could disseminate this to ministries and to other influential people. And we also had a lot more to do, so we restructured EFAD. Oh, sorry, slipped in there. To support member associations in developing the role that dietitians have in reducing inequalities and improving nutritional health in Europe. Like you, I'm sure we face real problems with the haves and the have-nots. And we decided that politically it's important to make this as our statement, but also because we firmly, firmly believe in it. And we wanted to improve our quality of service and our engagement by sharing best practice across Europe. So that was our mission statement that we adopted in 2011. Consider the political impact of mission and grab every opportunity you can to align your mission with the direction of political travel. These were our priorities in 2010, which we achieved using a Delphi method for consensus. Here we are, act as an advocate for dietitians at European level. Mobilize dietitians across Europe to participate in actions involving quality of life in health and disease. You can begin to feel that moving away from let's concentrate on ourselves to let's concentrate on what we can do. We restructured. We have now three standing committees. We created European specialist dietetic networks. So we have a specialist network in diabetes, in obesity, in food service, and so forth. And in 2013, we admitted higher education members as associates. So we now have universities as part of EFAD. We started a European Dietetic Student Network in 2014, which is going great. We had over 300 students at our last conference from across Europe. And we also formed a scientific and research advisory group in which we have members of the European Parliament, politically important, patients' forums, politically important, and other NGOs and strategic advisors. So you can see we've changed from being a group of interested national dietetic associations into a group, an alliance that is beginning to know how to get what it needs. We develop position papers and reports, such as Health in the Workplace. We meet with members of the European Parliament, and we decided if we could label the MEPs' menus, they would sit up and take notice. We haven't quite achieved that yet, but that's our ambition. We join various European bodies, which are very influential, such as the European Food Safety Authority. We sit on their stakeholder group and provide advice to them. We're members of an EU platform on diet, physical activity, and health, which is quite unique because it brings together the NGOs, of which we are considered one, and the food industry and others. But it is directly promoted by one of the agencies in Europe. We're part of the European Nutrition for Health Alliance, and I'll tell you a bit more about that in a minute. And we've joined various stakeholder committees for Europe-wide research, showing our expertise as dietitians in a research capacity. Strategic alliances need to be targeted and developed politically, and we're doing this across Europe. Guess what? Europe has a political agenda. Dietitians need to learn how to use this agenda to their own advantage, because, of course, it's the language that policymakers, employers, and key actors, e.g. the food industry, understand only too well. treaties, declarations, white papers, and so forth, all have to be quoted and used to the advancement of our profession. We need people to take notice of us and what we can do. We also need to learn how to use words, because words are important, such as added value, sustainability, multidisciplinary, harmonization, productivity, and so forth. This is the major driving force for many, many, if not all, European policies, Europe 2020. Europe 2020 is the EU's growth strategy for the coming decade. Notice the words here: smart, sustainable, inclusive. And how are we going to do that? Through high levels of employment, productivity, and social cohesion. Can dietitians tap into that? Can we make a difference? And you're sure we can do, but how do we tell people we can do it? Oh, Health 2020 in French, same thing. Health 2020, if you like, comes from Europe 2020. And it encourages health ministries to bring key stakeholders together in a shared effort for a healthy European region. Now, here is the place for dietitians. Healthier European region, and as Sonia said to us yesterday, and as the video very, very vividly portrayed in the opening ceremony, dietitians make a difference. Make a difference to health through nutrition. So here, how can we tap into this? Well, we got ourselves invited to a meeting of ministers of health and representatives of the member states of the World Health Organization European region, where they debated and then adopted a Vienna Declaration on Nutrition and Non-Communicable Diseases in the context of Health 2020. Fascinating meeting. Actually, we weren't able to speak to, well, we could during the coffee break speak to the ministers, but during the actual meeting, we only had to observe. But we learned a lot from just observing how ministerial teams work together to produce these kinds of declarations. I'm thinking EFAD needs a few more declarations. I'm thinking that's the next thing we've got to do. Anyway, at the end, they decided that they needed a food and nutrition action plan and a physical activity strategy. We haven't got one of these yet. It's on its way. It'll be produced next year. But the new food and nutrition action plan is available. It was only produced, only adopted about 3 weeks ago. And these are the objectives. Create a healthy food and drink environment, promote the gains of a healthy diet throughout the life course, especially for the most vulnerable groups. Remember our mission statement, inequalities we're going to tackle. Reinforce health systems, promote healthy diets, support surveillance, monitoring, and evaluation and research, and strengthen governance, alliances, and networks for a health in all policy approach. What do you think? A brilliant political agenda for dietitians to latch onto. So everyone now that produces anything for EFAD is going to make reference back to Europe 2020, Health 2020, and the Food and Nutrition Action Plan, because this is the language that's going to get us noticed. And there it is. And we have already begun to talk to the senior director who is in charge of this action plan. And I said to him, I said, he's Portuguese, so I don't pronounce his name right, João. I said to João, I think we need to come and talk to you about what dietitians can do. The European WHO region is based in Copenhagen. I said, when can I come and see you in Copenhagen to talk about what we can do? And he said, well, how about next week? I said, oh, sorry, I'm actually in Atlanta next week. How marvelous is that as a reply? Pretty good, huh? But I'm going to go and speak to him. So we need to plan politically. Why do we need to do this? Because people cross borders, and we need a safe and high quality of practice throughout Europe. So we need to address registration and lifelong learning and remaining competent, And above all, we need to address communication and networking. So I do a lot of visiting in various places, and you might just recognize a few of these people. You see Jesse there? And Ethan? Yeah, and Karen? Yeah, some of your academy notables. This is when we were in Romania. And we celebrated the 60th anniversary of the French Association. And when I was invited to come and speak in Austria, I had the opportunity to speak to the Minister of Health in Austria. So I'm always putting forward the best foot, as you say, for EFAD and dietitians. Oh, yes, this is in German. And when I go, I also take note of what's going on. So here's the challenge for Germany. 15 to 17,000 dietitians in Germany have no bachelor qualification. A title fully recognizing their role as autonomous professionals is not yet realized. They're still called diet assistants, and so forth. Fully accepting the European dietetic competencies at the point of entry and meeting the European dietetic standards is something they really need to concentrate on. But how do we reach these? And then success. Well, partial success. In 2014, two German universities opened a top-up degree. This means they offer the final year, the degree qualifying year, if you like, in nutrition and dietetics. And I was so privileged to go and be with one of those as they launched and opened that course. So alliances work through their problems. Once we recognize them, we begin to share information and we work through them. But once again, EFAD said, well, we want more money, please, more money. So we put in for a second thematic network bid, and this time we got about $800,000 to do some more work. We need to look at our expertise. We need to undertake and evaluate health-promoting interventions, develop and use communication, especially ICT, that's information, communication, and technology, because we've got a lot of dietitians in Europe that are not comfortable with technology. And we need to think yet more about our placements, especially in those novel areas of food and health. So what did we have? This was a project, this, as you mentioned, thank you very much in the introduction, but it actually finished late last year. So we produced a lifelong learning toolkit and competencies at MSc and PhD level. We looked at how to promote lifelong learning. We talked about innovative ICT-based educational materials. And we tried to support an ICT increased literacy. We had conferences and publications and guidelines. And we produced an e-journal to promote an evidence-based approach in Europe, an e-journal for European dietitians. And these were the different work packages that worked on all of those. The advanced competencies were published and adopted in 2012. So these are for those specialist dietitians working at an advanced stage. We produced a lifelong learning guide, which is very interactive and is on our website. And we looked at the diversity of placements used for students in Europe. We repeated a mapping exercise that we'd done in 2000. We repeated a mapping exercise, and in 2011 we started to analyze the figures. And we looked at the diversity and creativity that had come about. And in this diagram, the width indicates the frequency of these various different placements that have been used. So you'll see the public hospitals are still the most important, but you'll also see that there's little ones down here, pregnant women have been visited, restaurants, food industries, local councils, Air Force, all serve as placement opportunities now in Europe. And this is the reported number of placements and their duration. So here we've got, in the Netherlands, they use up to 11 different placements for their students. And you can see that in some countries, in Liechtenstein, they place a student in a placement because there are so few of them. So you'll see that there are different places. And this compares to where they were before, where you'll see that there's some, in some cases, grown. So what was the status of the best educational practice to ensure that the students had a quality learning experience in their placement? Given the diversity, we were really concerned that if a student is placed with the Air Force, are there dietitians there to supervise them? And what's the quality of that placement compared to, say, a hospital placement? So we asked those questions, and we used our practice placement standards, which you remember we had already created, and we went through some of the materials that had been posted on the website to allow us to see whether they were meeting the standards that had been set. And as you'll see, some do quite well. There were 18 standards. But look down here. HEIs provide appropriate support and training for the teachers and supervisors. 3 actually put up any standards. Not good enough. And these were the different partners that we reviewed. We couldn't review everyone that had posted information because, as I mentioned before, some of them were in their own country languages. So we had some speakers, so we only managed to look at 16, which is a very, very small sample. But it gives an interesting impression of when the standards were met and when they were not met. And this one is the one that I just drew your attention to. And you'll see that only partner 45 in this list, anyway, met 15 of the standards. This partner only met 1. So a lot of work to do and a great huge amount of diversity. So we decided that pedagogic standards needed to be put in place. Inclusive pedagogic standards, these are standards for the teachers. Regardless of where the placement is, these standards should still apply. And it was another step towards the quality of both education and the profession. So we took the practice placement standards and we devised some specific ones for the practice placement teachers. These were the dietitians or others in the practice placements. And that was really to encourage the diversity of placements, but emphasize the teaching aspect and the quality of that aspect. So there are 19 standards for dietetic placement teachers, and they cover the method and practice of teaching, a set of rules which we hope will ensure quality of that placement, and the teaching provided, the professional setting of where students are, there's information and requirements for how you put that together, and then how you facilitate learning by bridging the theory-practice gap. So these have only just been launched, and we don't know yet how well they'll be used across Europe. But they recognize the diversity of placements and the need for quality within those placements. So there was a growing diversity. Remember, in Holland, in the Netherlands, they use up to 11. And we wondered whether this is because we can't find the traditional placements, that's the clinical, or whether it was because there was more recognition of the changing demands on society. In other words, a reflection of Health 2020. There's a requirement for nutritional advice in a variety of settings, and that results in that growing complexity and diversity for the dietetic profession. So having diverse placements is a really good idea because it fits the dietitian for where they've got to go. But it creates all sorts of difficulties as the House of Delegate representatives were discussing yesterday morning. But it's the only way that we can see that dietitians can fully contribute to Health 2020 when they work in multidisciplinary and multidimensional roles and when they actually have that exposure during their training and their education. Alliances keep monitoring their strengths and weaknesses in a changing world. They develop an evidence base which they can use for communication and for political awareness. So the strategic alliances in Europe for our professionals in higher education was prepared together. They looked at practice placements, guidance, pedagogic standards, and advanced competencies. So you can see that we're gradually becoming a profession more fit for purpose. And, of course, we now have our higher education associates with us so that we can actually talk together again as our networks have finished with their funding, but we take forward them into EFAD's business. Alliances know that we're all in this together. Pictures of our conference and some of our publications. I'm coming back to Europe again because the European Union, Europe 2020, wants to promote economic and population health, yes. Wants to promote easy transfer and work across Europe, so they want us to move freely as professionals and as people across Europe. And there is a huge debate going on at the moment about cross-border recognition of qualifications. This is causing us some anxiety, because essentially it means that the dietitian with the food technology degree should be able to come and work freely as a dietitian in the UK, where we have very stringent rules about what a registered dietitian is all about. Europe says they're a dietitian. That's what their country calls them. They should be able to work in the UK. So we're having a terrific battle, and it's not just the dietitian with the food technology degree. This is across Europe. This is the doctors, the nurses, the occupational therapists, the physiotherapists. But Europe is demanding us to have freedom to cross borders. So we are lobbying like mad to make sure that the health of Europe doesn't suffer from having inadequately prepared dietitians and other health professionals. They also want us to have transferable and transparent education. This is cross-border students working across borders. And that's easier to manage. So growing the profession in Europe requires us to look, well, what's happening with recognition of dietitians? What's happening with the protection of title? So a questionnaire has been sent to national dietetic associations and followed up with virtual meetings. And we're asking about what is happening with registration and protection of title in Europe. And so far, 33 have been accomplished, but we've only got the results that have been worked through for 19. So I'm going to show you the preliminary results. Is the title dietitian protected by law in your country? Yes, says 12. No, says 5. And in Sweden, the reason we've got these little pluses is that the title is not protected for the food service dietitians, but it is for the clinical. Strange. How do people gain the title and recognition for a dietitian? Well, from 10 associations, you just need to graduate from a recognized HEI. Doesn't matter if it's food technology, if it's a recognized HEI. Or in 3, graduate from a recognized HEI and complete some practice. So these don't need to complete practice necessarily. 1, complete all the necessary requirements and have a master's degree. And 2, didn't specify. That doesn't look too encouraging, does it? How do dietitians stay on the register once they're there? Well, as long as they pay a fee, they can be on the register, and they can be there forever. In some countries, there's no fees, but you can stay on for as long as you like. As long as you're working, only after your competence has been evaluated. My goodness me, that's not very impressive, is it? Competence to remain on the register. Competence is evaluated. Competence is not evaluated. Doesn't matter. What's happening to safety and quality, therefore, of the information, the teaching, the assistance which these dietitians are giving? Where competence testing does happen, it's usually using a portfolio, reflection, and so on. But what's the consequence if you fail the evaluation? Well, nothing. You don't get a license, okay. No health insurance reimbursement, but you can work elsewhere. Not allowed to work in the healthcare institutions, but you can work elsewhere. Missing points may be made up next year, or you're given time off to address your shortfalls. Mm-hmm. So even if you have your competence evaluated, nothing might happen. Alliances are as strong as their weakest point, and we certainly need to support each other. That gives us food for thought. And at the conferences that followed, we began to look at things like an evidence-based approach to nutrition and dietetics, lifelong learning for a secure nutrition future. We began to up the ante and focus people on what actually is required for a strong profession in Europe. And registration is one of those areas that we are going to have to address. More conferences. This is from the most recent conference. We do have time to enjoy each other at lovely places. This was in Athens, so that was down by the port. And we have our EFAD publications. We have a Best Student poster prize, donated kindly from Kellogg's. And here are the two winners. And they're both from Estonia, which, of course, has no dietetic degree. But never mind, we won't worry about that. It was on a very, very interesting work from two food science students that had looked at healthy eating in schools. Interesting. Workshops. And these two workshops, one was on the ICF, the International Classification of Function that's used in the Netherlands, and the other one was on IDNT. More pictures. We're encouraging students, and here we are, reflection on lifelong learning outside the classroom, largely because they don't necessarily cover it in their own HEIs. Round table discussions, students working together. And we, of course, share information from what's going on around Europe. We have our website, EFAD's website, which has a whole lot of interesting, all publicly available, conferences, webinars, and so forth, lifelong learning guides. Which brings us up to phase three, dietitians formulating strategic alliances. So now we're much more geared up to thinking, how are we going to get our message across? How are we going to make things change? This is Europe at a glance. Here's our population growing. Here's diabetes. I've chosen diabetes instead of obesity. Deaths due to diabetes in Europe. Five top countries for people with diabetes: Russia, Germany, Turkey, Spain, and Italy. And Europe has the highest prevalence of children with type 1 diabetes in the world. So big challenges for dietitians. We are utterly, utterly thankful to the Dutch Association of Dietitians for commissioning this report called Cost Effectiveness, the Value of Dietitians, based on international published research evidence. And this was published in 2012. And this is available on the EFAD website, and I would recommend you look at it. I'm just going to show you a couple of bits which you might find interesting. This is a figure out of that, so I apologize. It's not particularly helpful, its quality. Specialist dietary treatment leads to a healthier diet and more exercise. Brilliant spelling. And then there are the indirect effects that happen through this encounter with the dietitian. Better quality of life, lower medical costs, and higher production, lower social insurance. Better quality of life, lower medical costs, higher productivity. All agenda items for our politicians. People feel better, they talk about it. Lower medical costs saves the country money and the individual. And higher productivity is exactly what the EU want. They want people working longer with less absenteeism. So, to the European Ideas Network at the EU Parliament, this is the message I gave, based on that Dutch report. Treatment by the dietitian has various social benefits. The health of the patient and his family improves. And that was a message that came out of that video, didn't it, yesterday, shown at the opening. Such that the cost of healthcare can be avoided and the productivity of the patient increases. But this is the important bit, I think. For every €1 spent on dietary counselling of these patients, society, it is estimated, gets a net of between 14 to 63 euros in return. 56 euros in terms of improved health, that's savings in terms of healthcare and in terms of productivity gains. So, the treatment of patients with obesity and obesity-related diseases creates social benefits between 0.4 and 19 billion over a period of 5 years. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? Brilliant report, based on international evidence collected and analysed. Please read it. It gives a lot of good ammunition for talking about our value. So we're working across Europe at a strategic level. We're joining in research projects. MyPace is an app for interactive engagement of dietitians. Food for Me is about planning nutrigenomics, using nutrigenomics to plan nutrition, all done via the internet. And the European Nutrition for Health Alliance, we're looking at Optimal Nutrition for All, which is a multi-stakeholder project across 6 countries at national level to introduce screening for malnutrition. Alliances are supportive. I'm becoming more engaged with the World Health Organization European region. Here I am in Copenhagen. Notice this has 53 countries in the European region, of which not quite half, but nearly half, are Russian-speaking. So we go right up virtually to China if you look at the whole region. And who knows what's going on for dietetics there. We're aiming to become a collaborating centre with the WHO. We're aiming to be regular attenders at ministerial meetings. And my ambition is that a Minister of Health is going to say, in our country, dietitians are, I can't wait for that to happen. We're working more across countries, and we're looking forward to finding out what's happening in Russia and the other stands, Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan and so on. And we're also going to be working more closely with other healthcare professionals that we've met at the WHO. Also working with the NDA presidents on politically challenging issues that they have at national level so that we get dietetic cohesion and recognition, but at national and European level. Also working with those countries where laws force dietitians to take a diminished role, particularly in Portugal and Romania, and writing to ministries and making representation. Also thinking very strongly of creating a European dietitian action plan. Alliances work together to set future agendas. They are proactive. Dietitians make a difference. They do. This was our conference that we had last week. And the program was very interesting because for the first time we had our various ESDNs, our specialist networks, holding workshops. Alliances invest and grow their futures. Communication is now geared up. And in 2016, we're looking forward to welcoming you in Europe to Granada and continue to work on our alliance building. So, I've collected together all those little things that were in yellow about the strengths of alliances to build a strong dietetic profession for global action. I'm not going to read through these because you've seen them all, but I think this is where our strengths are. We are a very large body of professionals in Europe, in America, in South America, throughout the world. And yet, I don't think, as yet, we work strongly enough together. Never underestimate the power of those alliances. We keep monitoring our strengths and weaknesses. We're all in it together. And we invest and grow our own future as dietitians through alliances. What an honor to present this lecture to you. Thank you.
I want to thank you very much, Dr. Deloy. You've done wonderful job. A lot of success has been achieved. And I think that, I know it really shows a lot of hard work. It looked nice and smooth and everything goes well, but it was really wonderful what has been achieved. And so I want to encourage people to ask questions. And when you do ask questions, just give your name and where you're from. And there's some microphones here. But I do have a question, and it's almost unfair to ask. What is the next biggest challenge?
Well, I think one of the problems is we sometimes don't know what the next biggest challenge is because it comes out of left field. And I think that's why throughout Europe we've been working to try and get, if you like, a profession that's ready for challenges. So strengthening our placements, strengthening our education, and putting in place lifelong learning, and ultimately strengthening the registration of dietitians so that we have a real quality profession that can respond to those things. So we're working, if you like, at different levels. But I want to emphasize, if I didn't do it strongly enough, that we're working with 29 different countries. Each country has its own agenda, its own political processes. And if we're looking at registration of dietitians, that's a governmental issue. And I was sitting around with the presidents last week, and they just created a new registering body in Spain, and another one is on the way in Greece. And how long, I said, did it take you? Well, we've been working at this for anywhere between 25 to 12 years on this. Dedication. So things don't happen quick. Germany is really struggling as a diet assistant. And what makes me so angry, is that those dietitians are actually not working as assistants. They're working as dietitians, but they're not getting recognized for it. And that makes me angry.
Sorry. See, I told you she had passion, right? Any questions or comments that people have?
Well,
okay.
Thank you for your wonderful work. And I think we've been working on diversity for many years, and nobody realizes what diversity you are. Only someone who has lived in a different country those departments, they cannot imagine it.
No.
And I think that's the thing we have to learn from each other, to know that we all have the same work to do. And that's, as you can realize, America was not in British United Kingdom, Australia, Jamaica.
Yeah.
Now I think finally I've been trying so hard, thanks to you countries, as I think now the time is right.
And thank you to you, Alice, too, for supporting this for so long. I recognize a lot of faces.
Thank you.
So you all have a mission to go out and communicate to
Absolutely.
People that were at other sessions today how valuable and how much work we have to do. Question?
Hi. My name is Meera Penamecha. I'm currently actually looking for a job, but overall, most of my experience has been in the United States, and most recently I was part of the academic field, so to speak. I also practiced as a dietitian for a while. First of all, thank you so very much for a very inspiring talk about a very complex issue. Being out of a job, I've been thinking more recently about taking the dietetics practice to India because that's my background, so to speak. And it's very similar to that of your European experience just because of the fact that India has a lot of different states and lots of different languages. Yeah. So that part of it in and of itself, I think, is interesting. But my question to you is, in the EFAD, I noticed that Israel was a part of it. How did that alliance come about, and why from?
Yes. We have associate members. It's a bit like your AODA in a way. We have associate members, and Europe as a region, as I showed you from the WHO, has 53 countries. Okay. Of which Israel is part.
Okay, I see.
So we think of Europe as fairly small, but as a region, it's very big. So that's how it became. But we've also, in the network, we had Pakistan joining us, so we had a few international people as well.
Yeah, that was actually my second question. So you had mentioned Asian members.
Yeah.
So most of them were from Pakistan?
That was only in the network. That was independent of EFAD. EFAD is very much European.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional questions that people have?
One minute. Just because of the last question, I'm Rubina from Pakistan. I just want to say that this diet thematic network is very generous. And when I applied for my institution, they accepted me as associate member. And still we are benefiting from their website and so many facilities.
Good.
Okay. Thank you. We need to promote those success stories, too. Bev?
I'm Bev B.
That lady. We've corresponded a great deal, so it'd be nice to meet you.
I'm Bev Bages, Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics honorary member. But Anne and I have visited. I want to make a couple of comments, certainly trading on what both Judy and Alice have said. I am astonished at the level of accomplishment that you have achieved in a relatively short period of time. I had the pleasure of attending an EFAD meeting in Sounio, Greece in 1992, and at that point in time, you were talking about the cross-border issues and about establishing at least a six-month residency. If you were going to live in another country, you would have to establish at least a six-month residency before you could practice in order to learn not only the technical aspects of the practice, but also to establish an understanding of the social values and mores of the country, which I thought in 1992 was a very sophisticated point of view, and here it is in 2014, and this cross-border qualifications persists. So I'm astonished at what you've achieved. I understand and want to compliment you on recognizing the political aspects of it. And I also want to comment, though it's really not my place, it was at one time, it isn't today, but the Academy has very recently incorporated an international strategy into its plans. I'm hoping that there's a way to take what you have presented today, Anne, and to bring it back into the Academy's work on the international proposition. I think it would be very beneficial. And thank you for a terrific presentation.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Any other questions? One more question. Good.
Sure. I actually studied French when I was younger, and then I was sent to Germany as an exchange student, and I've always wondered about going back, but my question is more, you have EFAD. Can a dietitian from America, besides working through American Overseas Dietetic Association, actually become a member if you end up getting transferred or...
No. We're only a federation of associations, not individuals.
Not individuals,
so
okay.
If you joined an association, you would automatically be a member of EFAD if they were a member. However, if you go to the website, it's not difficult to enter the website. You can get a password very, very quickly. The only bit that's restricted is those committees which are wanting to post their minutes and so on. But everything else is open and accessible. And all the diets information is going to be accessible as well. We're making it all completely open.
Okay, and does it matter where, which dietetic association, would they all say that's fine?
If you're in an EFAD association, and they're listed on
They're
the
all
page.
Listed there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you could join any of them. And
absolutely.
Then, perfect.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you all very much. Thank you so much, Dr. Deloy. We really appreciate it. And I didn't ask you about a global exam, but anyway, we can all think of that, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.